when people see the first word of the topic, so they get a little bit nervous. It starts out with the word chumras. Then if they read the rest of the topic, it's not so bad. It's only 10 days a year, all the chumras. And the rest of everything else is mutter. So we'll try to understand a little bit this idea of we find in halacha, not only one, we find several chumras during the Aseret Tshuva, or at least for parts of the Aseret Tshuva, things that generally speaking most people are not so careful about, and try to understand just in the world of halacha what that's all about. How does that concept even make any sense? If it's something that, if it's also it's also, what exactly does that mean that we're machmer in certain things, and if we're really truly machmer, why aren't we machmer the rest of the year on those same items? So the sugya begins with probably the most famous of all the chumras of Aseret Tshuva. Is one that appears in the Shulchan Aruch. It doesn't appear in the Gemara itself, but it appears in the Shulchan Aruch, quote already from earlier sources. The Shulchan Aruch, in the first of the Maimakomos, in the Rosh Hashanah and Simon Tafresh Gimel, quotes the following, Af mi she'eino nizo bipashal kusim v'aseres mechuva tzarech lizor. Even one who is not so careful about, and we call this pas achum, pashal kusim is a little bit of a censor kind of a statement, that we don't want to offend some of the people who may be involved in publishing some of our works. So we blame it on the Kutzim, the Samaritans, but truthfully, it's all about all goyim. It's all about all of the Chum, all goyim, that a bread that was baked by a non-Jew is something that is highly questionable in halacha. Now, again, we're not even speaking about a real kashrus concern. If there's a real kashrus concern in terms of the ingredients, then I don't need a Chum and a Ses B'Tshuva, then you can't eat it the entire year. So we're talking about something that's theoretically 100% kosher. All the ingredients have been checked out, and there's somebody supervising the ingredients. So that's not really our concern. Our concern is, just the mere fact that was baked by a non-Jew raises a red flag in halacha. So Shulchan Aruch makes reference, that we'll talk about a little bit later, that even those people who are not so careful about this, why should they not be careful about this the rest of the year? We'll have to find out. But even those people who are not so careful about this, during the rest of the year, then everybody has to be more careful about this. So it's interesting that on this point, the Ramah makes a comment. The Ramah writes, V'yeshtecho adam l'chapes o l'fashpesh b'maisav, the Lashon Mehem Aseres Mechuvah. So Ramah almost reminds you what you're really supposed to be doing during Aseres Mechuvah. It's supposed to be Jum Tshuvah, Kishmam Kenu. The person is supposed to be thinking and wondering and trying to possibly improve his ways during Aseres Mechuvah. So perhaps Ramah is trying to drive home this point that a person shouldn't think that Aseres Mechuvah is just a couple of technicalities. I get a Faslichos check, a Machbarim Pasakom check, you know, I add my things into the Shemoneh Esrei check. Ramah says those are all important and we're not minimizing them, but that is the least significant part of Aseres Mechuvah. The main part of Aseres Mechuvah, obviously, is the Fashvesh, Lachasvesh, Lemaisav. But Afal Bichain, this is a practice that is recorded in the Shulchan Aruch, quoted from Rishonim, and we have to begin to understand what this is all about. So the fundamental question is, well, what should we be doing the rest of the year? And if whatever we're doing the rest of the year is sufficient, why is it not sufficient during Aseres Mechuvah? That's question number one we have to deal with. Now we move to what seems to be a totally unrelated area of halacha. But once again, we find something that is generally not practiced the rest of the year, at least by many people not practiced the rest of the year. And all of a sudden, during Aseres Mechuvah, or in this particular scenario, not even the entire Aseres Mechuvah, just the last day, the day of Yom Kippurim, so the day of Yom Kippur, all of a sudden we become very, very machmer on things that we're not so careful about the rest of the year. What is that? In the second of the Maimakamos, so the Shulchan Aruch Hilchos Yom Kippurim quotes, Yochel Litva Velukos Masai Shiyirtza, Rak Shiyakar Malayla, Ve'enim Avarach Latvila. The Shulchan Aruch is commenting upon the practice of going to the mikvah in Yom Kippur. We're going to leave out the other practice of receiving malchus. That was a common practice in Europe. That practice got lost when they crossed to America. Somehow nobody that I know of does it anymore. But these actually administer to one another a form of malchus. To be mechaber and aveiros, nobody does that anymore. Nobody that I know at least does it anymore. But tvila b'mikvah is an age-old practice. It has its roots already in the days of the Gaonim and the Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch. And it's practiced till this very day. That generally speaking, people go to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur. When can they go to the mikvah? Basically, anytime they want, as long as it's before dark. The Shulchan Aruch just drives home the point that one does not recite a bracha on this going to the mikvah. By telling us that one does not recite a bracha, basically the Shulchan Aruch is lowering the status of this practice to the status of a mere minhag, not to a real mitzvah, not to a real obligation. If it was a real chiyuv, then presumably one would recite a bracha, the same way that a woman recites a bracha. So Shulchan Aruch is taking a clear stand that a bracha is not recited. The reason why the Shulchan Aruch has to go out of his way to mention that is that there was one opinion that maintained that a bracha is recited. That was the view of Rav Sadia Gaon. The Rosh in Maseches Yuma quotes from Rav Sadia Gaon that not only does one go to the mikvah of Yom Kippur, one actually recites a bracha on that tefillah, and the Rosh throws his hands up and says he doesn't know where that comes from. Why should you recite a bracha? It's not a chiyuv. It's only a minhag, says the Rosh, and it's a kind of a minhag that doesn't warrant a bracha. So for the last 1,000 years, nobody that I know of, almost nobody that I know of, has recited a bracha on the tefillah of Erev Yom Kippur. The only person I could tell you that one time recited the bracha of tefillah of Erev Yom Kippur was one of my kids. Why they recited the bracha? How did I know they recited the bracha? But one time when one of my boys was younger, so I brought them to the mikvah of Erev Yom Kippur, so I was standing outside, and one of my kids was into the mikvah, and I hear him saying a bracha, baruch atah. So when he came out, he asked, why'd you make a bracha? So he said to me very innocently, because it says on the wall, before going under the water, recite a bracha. Yeah, that's for the women who are supposed to recite a bracha. So I think in subsequent years, either they covered up the bracha or they put a note, women recite the bracha upon going to the very extreme mistake. Anyway, getting back to that story. So we don't follow that practice of Rav Sandigo. We follow the Rosh and the Shulchan Aruch that we don't recite a bracha on the tefillah. The question is, well, why are we going for? What is the point? What is this all about? So the Ramah makes mention in the next line that this is related somehow to Tumas Keri, to the fact that a man is Tomei. He had, during the course of the year, he became Tomei Tumas Keri, and he wants to be retired himself before Yom Kippur, which just pushes the question back, well, is that something that we are worried about the rest of the year? Is that something that we're not worried about? If we're not worried about the rest of the year, why in the world do we become all of a sudden concerned with things that don't seem to be halakhically binding during the rest of the year? So we have two different minhagim. One applies to the entire Seder Tumei Teshuvah of not partaking of bread that was baked by Goyim. Then you have a second minhag, which is the second chumrah, which is to make sure to go to the mikveh, things that most of us don't do all the time. And somehow these two practices that are not really binding in halacha, prove positive they're not binding. We don't follow them the rest of the year. We don't even make a bracha when we go to the mikveh of Yom Kippur. But somehow they have become part of our practice. And the question is, what are they all about? What are they based on? How do you have this phenomenon in halacha that are we supposed to be doing these things or not necessarily supposed to be doing these things? So both of these sugyas probably have their roots in the same statement of Chazal in the third of the Ma'amar Kamos. The Gemara in the third of the Ma'amar Kamos in Maseches Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, is talking about a practice that at one time was normative halacha and then in later years was no longer followed. And that's referring to what's called Shemen Shel Akum. The Mishnah tells us in Maseches Avodah Zarah that the Chachamim said one is not allowed to partake of any oil that was produced by non-Jews. One could just imagine what that would do to us today. All oil is off limits. Any oil produced by a goy, not because necessarily of kashrus concerns, although that's one opinion of the Gemara, but some Chazal prohibited all the oil produced by the goy. What was that all about? Why in the world did Chazal ever dream of making such a prohibition? So the Gemara says that they were concerned. The same way they were concerned that you shouldn't have wine that was produced by Goyim, and you shouldn't have food that was cooked by Goyim. Any kinds of food which is produced by Goyim can potentially lead to a little bit too much of friendly intermingling, and that intermingling can potentially lead to terrible, terrible consequences of chaslas of intermarriage. So therefore, Chazal wanted to nip the problem in the bud. In the same way they said, the non-Jew can't cook you a steak, and the non-Jew can't pour you a cup of wine, the non-Jew can't produce oil for you either. So the Mishnah, Maseches Avodah Zarah, tells us that even though that was the practice, that was normative halacha for many, many years, Chabar Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya was the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. That's why they, instead of calling him Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Nasiya is the Aramaic word for Hanasi. So they wanted the friendship between the two, so they called him Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya. He was Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's grandson. You're talking about after the days of the Mishnayos already. You're talking about the very the beginning of the period of the Amorayim. The Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya is quoted as saying that we can do away with this gezeira. We don't have to follow this gezeira anymore. Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya canceled, he negated this prohibition. And the Gemara says that's what we follow today. And anyone who wants to be machman, that is shalokin. You're not allowed to be machman that, because that was the psak of Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, that Shemin Acham Amirin in his mutter. The Gemara raises a very, very serious problem about how that happened exactly. How did that transpire? If there was a formal gezeira de Rabbanan, if there was a real decree in the Rabbanan not to partake of oil of goyim, what authority did Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya have to revoke that gezeira? We have a general rule that a later Beis Din cannot cancel a previous Beis Din decree unless the later Beis Din is greater to be Chachamim, there are more people in the generation, etc. And we assume that that probably wasn't correct. Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, as great as he wasn't his grandfather, and therefore he wasn't the generations before. So what right did he have to revoke a previous decree? So the Gemara tells us in the third of the Ma'amar Kamos, and if it is all, I'm involved now, to Amr B'Shmo B'Abim Rabbi Yechanan, Yashir Rabbi Seinu U'batku Al Shemen Shalom Poshet Yisur Barov Yisrael, that although Chazal initially instituted a prohibition of having Shemen Shal Achum, over the years, they realized that this gezeirah was never really accepted. And they actually made a survey, they actually checked, and they made inquiries, and they realized that many, many people were not even observing this gezeirah in the first place. Once they realized that the gezeirah was never pashut of Rav Yisrael, then they said the following, now we rely on the chiddush of the following two tanoim. They used to say, the days that has no right to make the gezeirah, unless most of the tzibur is going to comply with the gezeirah. So when Chazal make a gezeirah, it is not enough just to think halachically, is it a good idea, a bad idea, does the gezeirah make sense for us? But we have to ask practically, will the people uphold the gezeirah? If the people are not upholding the gezeirah, then what are you making for? You're making a gezeirah, people are going to violate, that's ridiculous. So you don't make the gezeirah in the first place. And now the Gemara tells us the chiddush that even if the beis din made the gezeirah, and they misunderstood, when they made the gezeirah, they miscalculated, they thought the Olam would be able to observe it. And after 100 years, they realize it's just not happening. So then it behooves the Beis Din to cancel the Gezeirah. You shouldn't have a Gezeirah on the books that people aren't following. So therefore, the Gemara says that in later years, in the days of Rabbi the Nasiya, they realized that Shem and Akam just wasn't being followed properly. And therefore, they revoked. Therefore, they canceled it. So you see a tremendous finish from the Gemara, that you can have a Gezeirah Derabbanan. Not only a gezeirah derabbanan that's being discussed whether to be made, but even a gezeirah derabbanan that was at first passed, if it was passed shalei kedin, it was passed inappropriately, it didn't stand up the test of klal Yisrael, then in fact it's incumbent upon a later beis din to get rid of that gezeirah. So it's based on this that Tosfos in the fourth Ramakar must suggest why we find, on the one hand, the Mishnah tells us that Tasakam is also. The Mishnah says it explicitly, and no one disagrees with it. Chazal made it there. At one time in history, there was a gezeirah made against bread baked by goyim. And the reason for the gezeirah was obvious. It was Mishum Chastos, the same reason that we're afraid people are going to intermarry. You're going to eat bread of the goyim, you're going to be invited to the meals, you're going to eat with them, they're going to eat with you. It's not going to set up a good system. So therefore, Chazal made a gezeirah called Tasakam. So in the middle of the discussion of Adizara, the Flamenhewa Beis, concerning Tasakam, the Gemara has a line. Almost like it sticks out like a sore thumb. The Gemara says, Tosfos quotes it, "Mechal be'ikel amandashari." The Gemara raises the question that it sounds like somebody permitted pasachim. What do you mean somebody permitted pasachim? What do those words mean? If the Mishnah says that pasachim was instituted, it was a practice in Klal Yisrael, it's recorded in the Mishnah, so how's the Gemara waking up 300 years later and saying, oh, it sounds like somebody maybe was master it? So the Gemara says, no, nobody really was master it. So the Gemara says, it sounds like somebody was. The Gemara says, no, it's not true. But Tosfos has the following observation. Tosfos says, from the fact that the Gemara is discussing, did the Beis Din master it, did the Beis Din not master it? So it sounds like they could have been master it. The Gemara is just discussing, historically, was there a later Beis Din that revoked the Gezeirah or not? But it's clear for the Gemara that, in theory, one could have done that. So Tosfos, how could that be? You can't just cancel Gezeirah. So Tosfos says it must be that the same way the Gemara says that Shema never caught on, Tas probably never caught on either. Now, this is a big jump because when it comes to Shema, so the Gemara tells us explicitly, Shema didn't catch on. Finished, end of discussion, and we can pinpoint that the Beis Din of Rabbi Nasiya that made that observation, they did their homework, they did their research, they concluded it was never Pashut for Rav Yisrael, and they canceled it. When it comes to Tas, the Gemara never tells us that. The Gemara just has a theoretical discussion. Was there ever a Beis Din that did it or didn't do it? So Tosfos says, aha. From the fact that the Gemara is discussing even the theoretical possibility, it's proof positive that Chazal understood that the facts were true for Shemen as well as for Pas. Pas was never Pashut Rav Yisrael. And therefore, Tosfos continues, not just a theoretical historical discussion, but the end of the first line, the fourth of Maamar Kamos, Umikan, it's based on this discussion, Samchu Ata Lecho Pashut Rav Yisrael. Says Tosfos, guess what? We eat Goyish bread today. We all do, says Tosfos. We eat bread baked by Goyim, and nobody says, I were violating a Mishnah. So the answer is, Kevan Shalom Pashat Yisroel Barov Yisroel, V'yesh Lismach HaDivrim Shem Galir V'lez B'tzadok, the Amri En Goyizun Gezeira Ala Tzibel Em Kerov Tzibel Em Kerov. So Tosfos takes the line right out of the sugya about Shemen. Just as the Gemara says that Shemen, we know for a fact, we can pinpoint the Beis Din historically that revoked it. Tosfos said, we can not literally pinpoint the Beis Din, but there must have been a Beis Din, and the Beis Din would be justified, and that is why we no longer practice the prohibition of Pasachim today. However, it's not exactly the same as Shemen. It's not precisely the same for the following reason. Shemen Akum was Hutzel Legamre. Nobody would ever dream, nobody would ever think of observing Shemin Achum today. The Gemara says that if a person is going to get up today and say, I want to be Machman Shemin Achum, he's like a Zochei Mamre. He's like someone who's rebelling against the Sanhedrin, because the Beis Din of Yehuda Nisiyah permitted it. The later, all the Amoraim permitted it. You have no right to be Machmir against a Psach of Rabbi Din Nisiyah. When it comes to Pas Akum, so most of the Rishonim point out that we didn't throw out the Gezeirah entirely out the window. We minimized it. We mitigated it. We chiseled away at it to the point where it's almost not recognizable. But we did leave a little bit remnant of it. What does that mean? So the Rishonim explain that there are two different types of Pas Akum. There's the Pas Akum when you have a neighbor, a friendly next door neighbor, who bakes you a loaf of bread. That's the ultimate Pas Akum, because there is a social relationship, and that's exactly what we're afraid of. But then you have another kind of Pas Akum, which is what's called Pas Palter. Pas Palter means, I know the baker, but it's a professional baker. It's the Goyish baker in town. So I know the person, but I don't have a social relationship. I'm not particularly interested in developing one. And that's a significantly less concern of chasna. Therefore, the Rishonim say as follows, that Pas Akum was low pasha for Rav Yisrael. Most people didn't accept Pas Akum in its entirety. That means we're not going to insist that all bread is off limits. That's very, very hard for people to do. So we're going to let them partake of Pas Palter, because after all, in the back of my mind, not so worried about that anyway, because the odds of marrying the baker's daughter are very unlikely. But Pas Malavayas, what's called, the Pas of the next neighbor, the Pas of the non-Jewish neighbor who you have a social or potentially may develop a social relationship with, that actually remains Bisura. That was never Hutta by Chazal. There was no need to be master that. So it comes out that the Heter of Pas Akum and Shemin Akum are similar, but yet still a little bit different. They're similar in that they're both rooted in the fact that neither of them was Pasha Barov Yisrael. They're similar in the sense that there was a Beis Din at some point that canceled both of them. They're different in that Shemin Akum is gone, goodbye, we don't have any Zeichen or no remnants of it whatsoever today. Pas Akum still exists in a very, very limited form. But the next door neighbor is bringing you kosher bread, the kosher ingredients, so then you still can't eat it because it's a chashash Pas Akum. But for all practical purposes, so none of us, or at least none of us, probably none of us in this room, really truly observe Pas Akum in any real shape or form. The odds of having a possible Abayi Shaila almost never happen. Once in a blue moon they happen, but usually not. And therefore, we don't think twice about eating Goyish bread. We'll partake of Freihoffer's bread, has a proper Shkach on it, assuming, and we'll partake of cookies and cakes, which are also considered to be part of Pas, as long as they have a proper Shkach on them. Even though they're Goyim, the factories are Goyim, the people are pressing the buttons are Goyim, there's no Jew anywhere around. As long as we're confident that the ingredients are kosher, we have some kind of a supervision on it to make sure the ingredients are kosher. So the Shkach is telling us the ingredients are kosher. The Shkach is not assuring us that it's Pas Yisrael. It says on the label, Pas Yisrael. So most of us are eating Pas Akum, and we're not too concerned about this. We follow the footsteps of Tosfos, who says that basically the Gezeirah was for the 99% Mizbatla, who was never Pasha Grov Yisrael, and finished. It's, for our purposes, just about the same as Shemin Akum. No. Well, that's called Pasha Yisrael. The Gemara tells us in Masechet Avodah Zarah that if the Jew participates in the baking process in any shape or form, that's already called Pas Yisrael. So what they're not telling you, what's not on the list of the Pas Palters, what they are telling you on the list, if the Hashkach X, Y, Z is assuring you that it's Pas Yisrael, so they are telling you that it meets the standards of Halachic Pas Yisrael, even in the old days. No, well, the Gemara says that Hashkach's Kisim is good enough. The Gemara says that the Jew starting a, the Gemara doesn't actually Hashkach's Kisim, the Gemara says that the Jew starting the fire is good enough, and then the Rishonim have a machlokes about what if the Jew does start the whole fire, but the Jew just throws a little twig into the fire, and we paskin. That's also called Pas Yisrael, and that's what our practice is. So even according to those who want to eat Pas Yisrael, if the Jew has tested the Jew other times during the year, would suffice without standards of Pas Yisrael. No, excuse me. The machlokes is the Ashkenaz is about Bishul Akum. The Gemara says the Feirish. No, the original machlokes about Havlokas HaEsh, because the Gemara speaks about Havlokas HaEsh being a matzah for Pas, so the Ashkenazi Rishonim said, who are they not for Bishul, and the Sfarim said, no, but for Pas, everyone is for Pas, the Gemara says it works. So again, so we have one example of a Gezeirah that was made that has disappeared pretty much off the face of the earth, that's Shemin Akum. We have another Gezeirah that was made about Pas Akum that has, in all practical purposes, disappeared. And now we have a third Gezeira / Takana that was made. I'll have to see how this is going to fit into the picture as well, and eventually connect the dots, how this plays out for Rosh Chodesh Esrei Teshuva. The Gemara in the fifth of the Mar Kamos in Maseches Bava Kamma lists off the 10 different Takanas of Ezra. So Ezra Seifer made 10 different institutions, 10 different enactments for Klal Yisrael. And one of them was, he instituted that if a man becomes tummy because of Tumas Keri, he becomes a Balkari, he has to go to the mikvah. He can't feel a Balakari. Yes, the Gemara, I needed Ezra to institute that. The Torah says explicitly, if a man becomes tummy with Tumas Shechva Zer, he has to go to the mikvah. The Gemara says, no. The Raisu is Tumas Kachim. In a Torah, you only have to go to the mikvah if you want to eat truma. In a Torah, you only have to go to the mikvah if you want to eat kabbonis. You want to go to the base of mikdash. If you want to remain tamik, isn't it? Hey, also, who tikkun afilu divrei Torah? The enactment, the addition of Ezra was, is that you're not even allowed to learn Torah. Or the Gemara continues, you're not allowed to daven, not allowed to make brachas, not say Shem Hashem. You're not allowed to do any dvarmship of kedusha until you go to the mikvah. That's not a posse of chumash. Min haTorah, if you want to eat truma, you want to eat kachim, you want to go to mikvah, you have to go to the mikvah. But for no other reason, the Rabbanan, Tachonah says there was, you have to go to the mikvah for any purpose of davening, brachas, etc. This is the second half of the third pack of Masechet Brachas, deals with the intricacies of this Tachonah. The Mishnayos and the Gemaras elaborate upon the details of this Tachonah. But this is a Tachonah that was made thousands of years ago in the days of Ezra. So comes Tosus on the sixth of the Mar Kamos on that Gemara, makes the following observation. Also, Iyu v'tikin afilu divrei Torah. The Gemara is explicit that Ezra made this takana. Says Tosus, lo kaima lan ochi. We don't follow this. We don't follow Ezra. What does it mean? We don't lean on ten sukkim and three aliyahs like Ezra said. We don't do other things. Of course, you have to follow whatever Ezra said. So what do you mean, lo kaima lan ochi? Ella Tosus says, Ella Krav Yudah ben Beseira, the Amad divrei Torah, emakablam tuma. We follow the view of Rav Yudah ben Beseira with the Tana Rav Yudah ben Beseira, who said that we don't have to be worried about divrei Torah becoming tamei? Because the Amar Brachos, I guess, would be Shemesa, Idenog, Amak, Losa, Sabe. The Gemara says in Brachos and Chulin that the Minhag Olam is to follow three different Tanaim about three different Shailas. And one of them was Rav Yudah ben Beseira. He was one of the three older men that taught the Sabe. And we pass in the Halacha that Tacharis Ezra doesn't apply. So Tosfos asks the obvious question. We have time here. Hechi Olam Rav Yudah Levat, Tacharis Ezra. Who gave Rav Yudah ben Beseira the authority to negate, to revoke Tachanas Ezra? As Rav Yudah ben Beseira was from the Halakha Tanaim, one of the great Tanaim, but he wasn't Ezra. So Vyeshloma, so Tosfos has a couple of possibilities. Tosfos says, the Dilma Savar, lo tikkun Ezra, davar zeh. Maybe Rav Yudah ben Beseira denied Ezra making the Takana. He says, that's not true, that he didn't make the Takana. A very, very difficult Tosfos, very difficult Tosfos, because to deny somebody made the Takana. The Tanoim had the Takana. The Mishnayos talk about the Takana. There's half a paragraph in Shas about the Takana. So Rav Yudah ben Beseira denied that Ezra made it, but some great person must have made it at some point before. So that throws into question. How could Rav Yudah ben Beseira be revoked it? So again, that's one answer in Taisa. Or Inami, Taisa says, Hisna shekom yisherot levat b'yavatel. So he dug up a Gemara, Moi Katan, the Chagavne, Mutta Kinyam Reish Moi Katan. The Gemara says to Moi Katan, that if a Beidin makes a Takana and they built a stipulation into the Takana, that if a lower status Bezin wants to repeal it, they have a right to do so they can do so. So again, the first two answers of Tosfos are guessing. They're guessing historically. Either they're guessing that Ezra claimed that the Rav Yudah ben Beseira held that the Takana was never made by Ezra, or Rav Yudah ben Beseira understood that Ezra put in the stipulation into the Takana. Again, very, very difficult answers. Then Tosfos throws out the most popular of the answers, Inami, Lo Pasha Yisrubar of Yisrael. Says Tosfos, the stammer, the embassy answer is the third answer, says Tosfos, that the Takana of Ezra, it was on the books, and it was probably practiced by some people, the Mishnayos, some of the Tanaim did follow it, but it was never Pashut Barov Yisrael. Not most of the people never really followed it anyway, and therefore, Kidyaminim Gabi Shem and Prekim Aminim. Tosfos makes reference to the same Tizman, the same story, the same way the Gemara defends the canceling of the Takana of Shemen. Chazal can cancel the later Tanaim, although they're not as great as Ezra, can cancel the Takana of Ezra Balkari as well. So we have three different Takanas that are mentioned in this Sugya. One of them appears in the Gemara explicitly as being repealed for this very justification, that it was never spread throughout Klal Yisrael. So that's Shemen. Then you have Tosfos and Avodah Zarah guessing that the same is probably true for Pas. Then you have Tosfos and Bava Kamma guessing that the same is probably true for Torah, Tfilas Ezra, for the Takana of not learning, not davening, etc., before one goes to the Mikvah. So we have three different Takanas. One's explicit in the Gemara, and two, the Rishonim are hoping that that's the reason why we don't follow these things as Ben Hazeh. So come the whole group poskim and suggest that this idea that a takana is made by a beis din, and then the takana just doesn't catch on, and it's ultimately rejected because there's no pasha b'rov Yisrael. In a sense, it's Klal Yisrael who are voting to or to not accept this takana. Klal Yisrael have a tremendous koach in dinim derabanan. They have a veto. Basically, Klal Yisrael can veto a psak in terms of a din derabanan. If beis din tells you there's a din deraisa, Klal Yisrael takes tomorrow. If the beis din says that according to the Torah you can't do malach on Shabbos, so then Klal Yisrael has no veto power. But in the creation of new Yisurim derabanan, Klal Yisrael can potentially veto it in lo pasha b'rov Yisrael. So come the whole group of Echareim and say, what if Klal Yisrael decides that they fundamentally don't want to accept the Takana, they don't want to accept this Gezerah, but they'd like to accept it partially. It means they want to meet the Beis Din. Negotiation run. Like some heavy-duty negotiations going on, I think, in Eretz Yisrael these days. So negotiating, I'll give a little this, you give a little this, maneuvering. Klal Yisrael is, in a sense, turning around to the Beis Din and saying, you made the following Takana, and we're just not going to be able to handle it. But we really do prefer, we want to accept it partially. So come a group of Achmarim and say, because if the power is limited by Klai, so Klai is ultimately the Keveya of the institution of the Gzeh of the Takana, then Beis Din can say whatever they want, then Klai will vote, and they can vote to repeal entirely. They can. They can vote to repeal it entirely, they can vote to accept entirely, or they can vote to meet halfway or partial way. They can accept the takana in certain circumstances and not other circumstances. So come a group Rachmanim and say, that's exactly what transpired in these two takanas that we're talking about. We have these two takanas that appear in the Mishnah, appear in the Gemaras, and we're looking around today, and people are not being makban in Pasachim, people are not being makban in Takanas Ezra. How did that happen? Well, Taisus told you, Taisus explained to you. Well, Pasha Barov Yisrael. To come a group Rachmanim and say, it's not true, it was low Pasha Barov Yisrael for the overwhelming majority of the time. However, there are certain times during the year when Klal Yisrael felt that it's appropriate for us to live to a little bit of a higher standard. We really should always be Machmed and Tas Yisrael. We really should always go to the Mikvah before Davi, before learning. That's what really should happen. We couldn't live up to it. It wasn't a chance. We admit our failings. We clap our hate. We can't follow the Pasachim. It's too hot. We're hungry. We need bread. We can't get Jewish bread. It's too hard for us. And Tekan Ezra, it's just too hard. It's a tirch. Every time we go to the mikvah, it's going to lead to Pitul Torah, to Pitul Torah. All the concerns the Chazal had, that they eventually negated it. But in the perfect world, Tekan Ezra is in fact correct. Therefore, comes Klal Yisrael and turns to the Beis Din and says as follows. In the middle of the winter, we're not going to have to follow this. In the middle of the summer, we're not going to have to follow this. But, you know, there are certain times during the year when we want to up the standard a little bit. There are certain times during the year when we want to live our lives like we really should the entire year. But now we can't live up to the rest of the year. When are these times of the year? Well, obviously, when these times of the year are during Asher Shemeshuvah. Why are these times of the year Asher Shemeshuvah? So the rabbi already describes to us that the Kadosh Baruch Hu looks at us between Asher Shemeshuvah and Yom Kippur, and anybody who is a tzaddik gomor, so it was already decided l'chaim toivim already on Rosh Hashanah. Everyone who is a Russian gomor has already decided Rosh Hashanah that's over. So what is the Aseret Teshuvah for? For everybody else. Who is everybody else? The Rambam says everybody. It means everyone has to assume. You have to always assume that your friend is a tzaddik gomor. That's why in Rosh Hashanah we give people a bracha. Why do we wish a person the alta means right away? Because I want to assume that you are a tzaddik gomor. So I say to you, you should get a ksiv chsibatov al pelchayim shalom. You don't even need Yom Kippur. You don't even need a Aseret Teshuvah. But for me, I don't wish myself al pelchayim shalom. I'm nervous. I'm afraid. Maybe I need a Aseret Teshuvah. Maybe I'm still Tzlivomden. Maybe I'm a Beinoni. So therefore, we have to up the ante a little bit. So the Aseret Teshuvah, the Rebbe writes, we try to live up to much, much higher standards. That's why we practice things that we don't practice the rest of the year. We don't say slichas all year long, but we say the Rambam Taka doesn't quote the meaning of slichas before Rosh Hashanah. The Rambam only quotes the meaning of slichas during the Aseret Teshuvah. So the Rambam says, why do we say slichas at Aseret Teshuvah? Because we want to show Kadosh Baruch Hu that we're trying to be a little bit more careful in the davening. We're davening a little bit more. We're going to take on new chumras, new midas chasidus, the things that we don't. According to the strict halacha, we should all be saying slichas every morning. We should be getting up at 5:30 the entire year to be ma'abim v'tachanunim. Hard enough to get the shachmas on time. Hard to get the shir on time. So never the rest of the year we lower the standards a little bit. So it's mitzvah, we up the ante a little bit. So that's what the poskim can say. It's exactly what's happening in these two practices as well. In theory, we should all be back on the Pasuk Yisrael all year long. We should follow the list all year long. But you have to be past Palta for the terrace is a time. It's hard to get past Yisrael. It's expensive. It's hard to find it. We get hungry, right? So therefore, at some point, the Chachamim involved with Sakhada. As Taisa says, it was the Hutra Beis did and finished it, ended discussion. So the rest of the year, we don't accept it, except for past Balabayas. But Aseres Mechuva, we could be more Machmir. So basically, Chai Yisrael voted during Aseres Mechuva that we're not going to avail ourselves of the Bittul of the Takana. We want to accept the Takana during Aseres Mechuva. We want to show Kiddush Baruch Hu that we're a little bit higher standard. If that's the case, it could be a tremendous Chumrah that comes after this. That the observance of Pas Yisrael during Aseres Mechuva is not a minhag. The observance is a din, because the only thing that stopped the original Takana from being intact is the fact that Chai Yisrael vetoed it. But if Chai Yisrael never vetoed it during Aseres Mechuva, if the most Olam, Chai Yisrael always observed it, then when we observe it during Aseres Mechuva, it's a din, not a minhag. When a person has a shaila about, is this Pas Yisrael or not Pas Yisrael, most people take the answer and hope he's a minhag, who cares, yesh l'hachol. Not so fast. According to what these Eshwarim are saying, is that it becomes nefach liot mamasha halacha because Klai Yisrael never negated it during Aseres Mechuva. If that's the case, then the same may be true for Takonis Ezra as well. In theory, we should all observe Takonis Ezra. Everyone should go to mitzvah every day, Takonis Ezra. But it's hard, it's difficult, it's going to be a hassle. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda ben Seira canceled it. They negated it and finished the Pasha Baruch Yisrael. But Klai Yisrael turned about and said, you know, there's one day a year we can go the extra mile. There's one day a year we have to be so makil. Yom Kippur, Yom HaKodesh, Yom Noiv, Yom Kippur. You can't be holier on Yom Kippur. Not Yom Kippur. What are you going to be a holier level? So go to the Mikveh of Yom Kippur. You're not going to be with your wife anyway Yom Kippur night. No one's going to become, hopefully no one becomes tummy anyway in Yom Kippur. So what's the big deal? It's so easy to observe and it's so appropriate to observe. So we all run to the Mikveh of Yom Kippur. If that's the case, so then maybe going to the Mikveh of Yom Kippur is not a minhag anymore. Maybe it's a din. Because if you're telling me that the only thing that canceled Takanas Ezra was the revoking it, was the veto out of it by Klal Yisrael, if we most Olam, Klal Yisrael always, Klal Yisrael has been going to the Mikveh and Erev Yom Kippur as long back as we can remember. The Tor, the Shulchan Aruch, the Rishon, the Gaonim, for 1,000 years at least, if not longer, there's been a minute to go to the Mikveh and Erev Yom Kippur. If you're going to tell me that the Jewish people never accepted the Bitla Takanas vis a vis Yom Kippur, that it could be going to the Mikveh and Erev Yom Kippur, it's not a minute. It's a din. It's an absolute halacha. And that could be, that's the view of Rav Sadigo. That's why Rav Sadigo said to make a bracha. The Rosh asked the Rav Sadigo, when you make a bracha, it's only a minute. So the answer is no, it's not a minute. It's really, really a din. So this is, these two statements that we just made are loaded with chumra. This is a chumra, what I just said. These are not just observing chumras in Aseres Mechuva. I just turned the chumras into real dinim. I mean, pasacha may be a din during Aseres Mechuva, and tefillah and Erev Yom Kippur may be a real halacha. The emes amitah is we probably don't talk like this. Erev Yom Kippur might be we don't make a bracha. Most of the poskim assume it's probably not really true. We probably treat Pasach and Aseres Mechuva through the eyes of Minhag, not through the eyes of Halacha. But there is another pshat in poskim. There is an approach in poskim based on everything that we said, that whenever you have a situation that there's a takana sacham, there's a gezeira that's made, and the takana really should be binding, and the only out is la parsha brov Yisrael, if Klai Yisrael themselves decide to accept it partially, then it becomes binding la Halacha, not the Teres Minhag, but binding the Teres Halacha in the partial that mention that Klai Yisrael accepts. Again, it would put a whole new spin on these two practices. It would elevate these two minhagim, these two chumras, out of the Rambam chumras into real dinim. So again, I didn't say lehalacha that we follow this, but it's an interesting idea that the way we practice during Aseres Mechuva, the way we practice on Yom Kippur, may be more than just a chumra, more than just a minhag, it actually may enter into the realm of halacha. Okay. No, there is an idea.
We are free to do it now. There's no concept. Where would it be before anywhere for a first performer?
I mean, during the Aseres Mechuva in general. During the Aseres Mechuva, okay, right.